Now stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being with us today. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, Rick Moore. Here today, our guest, Robin Jackson. Good morning, Robin.
Hi, Rick. How are you today?
I'm well.
Good.
Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Robin is the director of the Civility School here in Charlottesville. How many people actually know that there's the Civility School? I find that all the time. Our guest from last Sunday said, oh, it's the Civility School. Dan Gould here with us today said, oh, the Civility School.
Well, we've got to correct that, Rick.
We do, which is why you're here with me today.
Exactly.
You can find the Civility School on Facebook under The Civility School. You can find the website, thecivilityschool.com.
That's right.
And people need to know about it because we can all use a little upping on our manners and etiquette and civility, which is
all
what we're going to talk about today. This show today, pre-recorded. Save your muscles for your dialing for another show. One of the first things I want to learn is please define civility for me. Many people know manners and etiquette, whether or not we use them properly. Civility?
Civility actually comes from the Greek word civitas, which means to the city and from the city. So if when people go into the city, which right now, you know, like you can think of as kind of figuratively, when we go into society, we take away from society. You know, that's what we do. But we also need to learn to give back to society. So it's not just being with people is not a one-way street. We need to learn to also give back.
But does that mean I'm putting on my city clothes?
Right, no. Well, it could have. It could have thousands of years ago. Right now, it's, you know, a figurative term. So when you're with other people, you need to think that you're taking from them and you need to give to them as well. The Civility School's motto is for the comfort and convenience of others. So it's putting other people's comfort, other people's convenience in front of yours.
The Civility School, located in Charlottesville. How many years have you been up and running?
I have been up and running for 7 years. And while we are located in Charlottesville, we do a lot of travel. I speak with groups and work with people really throughout the country on civility workshop, workplace civility issues, graciousness in the workplace, professional graciousness, professional etiquette, and I also do work with children. I work with children here in Charlottesville, but I also travel.
We work with children.
I do indeed.
Children, are you teaching them their manners and etiquette?
Well, you know what? I try to think of it as much broader than just teaching manners and etiquette. I don't like the idea of just teaching anyone rote, memorized rules of etiquette, because I think, particularly in this day and age, we live in a global society. So what I teach someone that would work, if I were to teach rules, maybe 1 through 10, of what to do in Central Virginia, that may not come across as well in Central New York. It may not come across as well in Hong Kong or Paris or many of the other places where people might travel.
Give me an example.
The easiest example, and the one I go to probably far more than I should, but the one that I think is interesting is the use in the United States of sir and ma'am at the end of yes or no. So yes, sir, or no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am.
Yeah, I use that all the time.
Exactly. Well,
that's how I was raised.
You probably were reared here in the South.
Born in Charlottesville while my parents went to school.
Absolutely.
And grew up down in the Tidewater area.
Oh, well then absolutely. Your parents probably thought that is the right thing for them.
I grew up in a multi-generational family, so.
Right. So you were taught that. Many children in our area are taught to use sir and ma'am, and it's lovely. But it doesn't always come across that way in northern states and western states. It's seen as being a little bit servile, maybe a little obsequious. It makes people feel uncomfortable.
Obsequious.
Yes. Just a little goody-two-shoe-ish.
Okay.
So what I teach younger children is you absolutely do in your home and in your environment, you do what your parents ask you to do. You use your sir and your ma'am. But I do teach that you need to end yes and no with something. If your parents expect sir and ma'am, then that's what you'll use. But you could also say yes, thank you, no, thank you, yes, please, no, I don't care for that. You just don't want to sound blunt with people. You want to sound gentle. And there are very subtle ways of doing that. But it doesn't always have to be sir or ma'am. So I think being aware that sir and ma'am may not serve you well all over the country and in other parts of the world is a good thing to know.
What about, again, our guest today, Robin Jackson? She's the the director at the Disability School here in the Charlottesville area. You can find out more about them on Facebook at The Civility School or on the website at thecivilityschool.com. How would you tell someone to find out what the proper thing is to do? How do you go to New York if you're from the South? How do you go to New York or go to Los Angeles or go to France and find out what is the proper way to end your yes?
Well, I think first off, if you're old enough to do this, it's nice to do a little research before you travel. Especially if you're a professional. If you're an adult professional traveling, it's really vital to learn what kind of culture you're entering and how you need to behave. And that's one way. The other way is certainly to increase one's empathetic intention, to really increase one's empathy skills, so that you're aware when you're in a situation, you can start feeling whether you're kind of adjusting to the culture well. And really just keeping your eyes open, looking around. In my classroom for young children, and sometimes I use it for adults, I have a big poster of an eyeball. And that's basically not the evil eye, as some five-year-olds might think. But it is to tell children and adults to always keep your eyes open. Look around you. See what other people are doing. Don't just assume that what you've been taught to do in your small part of the world is what you should be doing in the other parts of the world.
Have we lost our manners from past decades, or are they just different?
I think I really don't see us as a lost cause. You hear that a lot. Oh, nobody has manners anymore. I think we went through a stage where we worried much more about children and young adults' self-esteem. And self-esteem became everything. We worried that if we corrected people or did not operate as if everybody were equal as far as a elder to child kind of relationship, or even a boss to assistant or, underling kind of a situation, that somehow we'd be hurting their self-esteem. And I think there we just kind of let manners go by the wayside. I think we have that going for us, and I think we also have the ever-evolving nature of mankind, and that's happened, obviously, since the beginning of mankind. So we have to keep evolving, we have to keep changing our manners, and we need to be aware that we need to use them. So I don't think it's a lost cause, but I do think we need to always keep up making adjustments.
Robin Jackson here with us. Now, you were on the program, on the wake-up call, and the version 1.0, as I refer to it.
Yes.
And I went and listened to the old podcasts of that. You can find those on cvillepodcast.com. And the word that we had a similar conversation, not that I expected that answer to that question about have we lost our manners, but you used the word deference.
Yes.
In describing that.
I think it's really important. Deference it seems to be an old-fashioned term. It's one that we, I think, really did lose along the way when we were more worried about individual self-esteem. But I think we have a hierarchy. There is a hierarchy with any living creature. And I think knowing how and when to show deference to others is a really important part of honoring that hierarchy. I think it a certain amount of structure in our society and respect for that structure and respect for each other is what holds us together and allows us to continue to grow.
How do you teach deference without going to the civility school?
I think many parents do a great job of that. I think where we have an issue perhaps becomes when children or young adults transfer into their professional lives, and perhaps they haven't been taught deference as well. So they transition into their adult lives and become maybe quickly overly familiar with their superior, start calling their superior by the first name, for example, way too quickly in the relationship, not understanding the order of introductions and who to introduce to whom first. I think we see it in customer service all the time. I think that's a sorely lacking area of civility in our society right now.
What about... I'm going to try so hard not to rant. When, you know, you're working with someone on the other end of the 800 number, when you call for customer service, and that person almost immediately says, Mr. Moore, may I call you Richard? Because that's the name that's under the account. And then proceeds to call me Richard throughout the rest of the conversation. Appropriate? Inappropriate?
It's inappropriate. It's inappropriate. It's not sincere. This is the other kind of element along with empathy. I really believe in sincerity. I believe in many of your listeners will be way too young to remember Eddie Haskell from Leave It to Beaver. But those of us old enough to remember Eddie Haskell will remember his goody-two-shoe behavior to the parents, and then, you know, he could often be a little terror also. I think when you ask somebody, may I call you Richard, you need to really mean that. You need to really listen for an answer, get the answer, and then abide by that answer. It can't just be a bunch of words that you throw out there to somebody. Same with manners in general. You know, if you're making somebody feel uncomfortable with your absurdly rigid manners, and I would use air quotes if people could see me, even though air quotes are a little bit unmannerly. if you're going to make other people uncomfortable and feel that they're less than with your overly rigid manners, you're not being sincere. You're not actually using manners. You're not being gracious.
Robin Jackson, again, director at the Civility School here in Charlottesville. Your Facebook page, I'm curious, what does the Civility School put on a Facebook page? Because it's so often that the Facebook pages are pointed out as people aren't usually gracious or thoughtful. And what people put up on their Facebook page is pointed out as, I don't want to see that. You're making it difficult to be your friend because of whether it's politics or social activities or a variety of things. What does the Civility School put up there? Is it only business, or are there other topics?
You know, it is difficult because I firmly believe that it's not necessarily our job to correct other people's poor manners or lack of empathy unless they ask for it. Unless somebody asks for it, unless somebody puts themselves out there in a public position where they are, asking for it.
My wife would tell you that sometimes I am asking for it.
You're asking for a little help in this area. I try not to be heavy-handed on the Facebook page for the Civility School. I try to talk about accomplishments in the area of civility, point out good things that are happening, with my students, good things that are happening with corporations that I work with, and good things that are happening out there in the world.
I'm curious, the title of today's program, however many times I choose to use it or not use it, manners, etiquette, and civility. So we define civility, the difference between manners and etiquette?
Etiquette actual rules that one should follow in, and they are different. They're different from place to place. You know, when you're in Europe, you do not keep one hand while you're eating. You don't keep one hand on your lap. That's seen as really rude. In America, we keep one hand, the hand that we are not eating, up. Oh, excuse me, I've got it. I do teach etiquette. I've got it backwards. In America, the hand that we're not eating with, we keep on our lap. And in Europe, you would never keep it on your lap. You would keep it up on the table. You would keep your hand visible at all times. So that rule of etiquette is different between Europe and the United States. So rules of etiquette can change. Manners are the way that we treat one another. And really, manners should not change. It's the way we treat one another.
There's usually an interesting story that comes to how the etiquette rules took place. Why would you keep your hand on the table or your hand in the lap?
Well, there are, you know, in Europe, most Europeans would say, we don't know what you're doing with that hand that's on your lap. So I think that's the European version. I'm not exactly sure. I cannot remember how the hand on the lap came about for the U.S. I think the last time we were here, we talked a little bit about the knife and how.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about foods.
Okay.
Let's go to some foods, and we'll start with the utensils on the table.
Yes. Yes. You know, I think that might be one of the most tangible parts of etiquette and manners is dining etiquette. I think it's easily learned. I think that's the kind of thing that really you could read a couple, you know, look at some books and figure out what's appropriate wherever you're traveling.
I always want a 3x5 card.
Right. Oh, what a great idea. Maybe the civility school will have to come up with one of those.
I'd like a plastic one that I could prop against my water glass so I could remember what to be doing at the time.
Well, you could practice at home with it. I don't think I'd pull it out at a dinner party. I think I'd have
bad
it
etiquette,
memorized.
Bad etiquette on my
right,
part.
I have that memorized. But things like knowing which fork to use, that's fairly easy stuff once you've been made aware of it. I think the biggest point there is being made aware of it. Being made aware that when you sit down, there is some kind of a plan. Because you often look at, you know, children, but even adults who sit down at a dinner party and almost have a look of fright in their face as they look at their place setting. So I think just being made aware of it. I also don't think you need to abide by all the rules all the time. The great thing about knowing the rules is knowing when you're breaking the rules. Making a decision to do something is a lot different than being ignorant about it and kind of adhering to that ignorance. It's much better to know that you're about to do something maybe that isn't particularly right. You may even want to communicate that with whoever you're with. But that's a completely different story. So I think making people, children, adults, aware that there are rules, that there are customs, is the greatest part of what we can do.
All right, so let's talk a bit about utensils, because okay. I know there's a break coming up.
All right.
The knife.
Yes, the knife. So in the Middle Ages, you know, your dagger was everything. You would use your dagger to fix something on your stone wall. You'd use it to defend yourself against other humans. You would use it to defend yourself against animals. You would use it to kill an animal for your dinner. Then you'd come in, you'd wipe your dagger off on your garment, because really they didn't know anything about anything that was smaller than what's to the eye. And then they would come in and use it to spear their food and eat, and they'd eat with their hands as well. But there was a lot of alcohol, because, you know, clean water was hard to come by, so there was a lot of alcohol served. And they would get in these rows, and then they would start debating, and then spinning your knife so that the blade is facing one of your dining partners meant that you wanted to challenge that person, and so there'd be blood all over the place. And for that reason, we never turn the blade of our knives toward someone else when it's resting on our dinner plate, because you don't want to have a duel at the dinner table. Yeah, and the boys like that.
And Oh, my. All right. Take our first break. Again, our guest, Robin Jackson, director at the Civility School. If you want to have your dinner party, if you're 5 to 8 years old or 9 to 12 years old and you're a guide, you want to learn why you can't spear your food or duel with your knives, it's no longer proper. Sorry. Mom, send your boys to the Civility School for a class. We'll be right back. And back in action. Thank you so much for being with us today. This is WPVC 94.7. We're being progressive on the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville here with Robin Jackson. She is the director of the Civility School. I'm Rick Moore, host of the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, talking about manners, etiquette, and civility. And that's why we asked Robin to be here.
Well, thank you, Rick.
Where else are we going to go besides to the Civility School if we want to learn anything about how to be civil? So we were talking about food. We were talking about utensils. So I know why not to spin my knife at the table.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So what is the little fork across the top of the plate for?
Do you mean the dessert fork?
Is that what that's for?
Yes. Yeah. So dessert, your dessert fork.
The fork is too small for me for desserts. It's why I always keep the biggest. I keep the biggest fork.
The dessert fork and the dessert spoon can be placed at the top of the plate, or they can be brought in with the dessert itself on the dessert plate, which is actually my preferred way of serving dessert. It's a little tempting if it's sitting up there on top of your plate, at the top of your plate for the whole meal, to want to use it. So I like just offering it with the dessert.
Less likely to be misused.
Well, that is true, especially if children happen to be at your table. I think keeping fewer utensils rather than more is probably a good idea at that point.
Is there a proper way to use the napkin?
Oh, there are all kinds of rules about the napkin. There are all kinds of... The main rule about the napkin is that it is for just cleansing your face lightly. It is not meant to be a washcloth, and it is not meant to be a flag to be unfurled before you sit down at the table. It is not meant to be dipped in your water. And you do not...
What do you do if you get something on you?
You excuse yourself and you go to the restroom. But you don't say you're going to the restroom. You just say, excuse me, please. Yes.
What about for those of us who always manage to dribble food on our shirts? Can we tuck it into our shirt?
No, I'm sorry, Rick. No tucking. Now, if you go to a lobster restaurant and they give you a paper bib, you are really free to wear that paper bib. But no, you cannot tuck your actual napkin into your collar. It's been upsetting to many people, but no, you can't.
So I just need to buy a lot of shout pouch things?
Yes, and the little tied sticks that you can carry around with you work lovely.
But I have to excuse myself before using that as well.
Exactly, yes. And please, 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 no toothpicks at the table. No toothpicks at the table. If you need to use a toothpick, it's really preferable to go into the bathroom.
Oh, goodness, this food category is really kind of depressing, actually.
Well, it is for many people.
I'm realizing my low score.
Well, the great thing is, Rick, when you eat by yourself, it's perfectly acceptable to do all these things.
Well, What are you saying, Robin? Robin Jackson, director of the Civility School, the Civility School on Facebook, thecivilityschool.com. Robin, do you have a LinkedIn page? People still use that, right?
Yes, I think they do. I do. It's under Robin with a Y, R-O-B-Y-N, Jackson.
Are you, because the Civility School, previously... You did a lot of work with kids.
Yes. And I still do. I do a lot of work with children. I also run the Jefferson Cotillion here in Charlottesville, where we learn manners and some dance steps. I have incredibly great dance instructors, Lisa Morales and Kevin Schuyler. I work very, very hard at... We work very hard at keeping that modernized yet with the same traditional rituals. But I also do work quite a lot with business organizations, nonprofit organizations, adults. I do a lot of work with adults.
We'll get into a little bit of all of that as we go along. But Jefferson Cotillion.
Yes.
Now, I grew up in the South, so I know what a cotillion is. I'm curious. We have Dan here producing the show today from Canada. I'm wondering if his, you know, like there's a big Dr. Seuss question mark over his head. I don't know how many listeners out there are familiar with a cotillion.
Right. I would love a chance to kind of talk a little bit about the cotillion. The cotillion is a old kind of format where children would come together, boys and girls, usually at adolescence. Usually the traditional cotillion was children in the, you know, maybe 11, 12 to 15 year old age group. In many places, it is the first step toward becoming a debutante for the young women. In Charlottesville, we have a traditional cotillion. It's a little modernized. For example, we don't wear white gloves. The girls don't wear white gloves. We don't use dance cards. But we do follow many of the traditional cotillion rituals. So we teach dance steps. We teach girls and boys how to start treating each other kindly in social situations and respectfully in social situations. And then we also go over traditional dining, dance floor etiquette. Really kind of, though, I think of it more as learning how to be around one another in a respectful way.
You mean how 13, 12 and 13 year olds can actually not be shocked into the corner?
Yes. Yes, that actually is what I mean. It's really, I feel honored to get to watch some of this and participate in it, because usually at the first cotillion session, which is happening very quickly in a week, actually. So I know this is being pre-recorded, but October 16th is our first cotillion session. I will get to watch boys and girls try to navigate that strange area where they have to touch each other to dance. And sometimes the boys will keep their hands about 3 inches above the girl's hand so that they're not actually touching. They can participate, but they're not actually touching. By the second or third dance class, they're actually touching. The girls seem much less hesitant, however.
Robin Jackson here from the Civility School. I want to go back to the food part for a little bit. We'll leave the utensils alone because I'm now just going to eat finger foods. What are some of the more, you must teach difficult foods, because things like spaghetti come to mind.
Yes. Spaghetti is usually a very big lesson with the younger children, how to eat spaghetti correctly. Amazingly, however, a lot of the lessons have to do with when to use a spoon and when to use a fork. People tend to use spoons way too often. They tend to use their teaspoon for eating their peas or for their mashed potatoes or their macaroni and cheese. And sadly, that is not proper etiquette.
Do you see that just because of the age?
Oh, no, I see it in adults. I see it in children. The dinner roll is another area that
seems
it's very problematic.
I caught that listening to one of the previous podcasts.
Yes.
And was telling that story to Dan, again, the producer here with us today, and he gave me that look of, what are you talking about? So please, I'd like to know why the dinner roll is a difficult food to eat.
Well, at the risk of stereotyping, you know, Dan is from Canada, and
that doesn't matter.
They're lovely people.
Canadians eat dinner rolls, too.
Yes, but you know what? I bet there are far fewer butter sandwiches clumped together.
And I'll own up that when I'm listening to the podcast of this show, the first time you told this story, I admitted to owning up to having my own problems with the bread.
It is. Well, there's so many options. You have this dinner roll sitting there. There are many things that you could do with it, but the proper way is to break it in half in the middle, not like a hamburger roll. Put it down on your plate, and then use the table butter knife to put butter on your bread plate. Use your butter knife or your dinner knife to butter your bread one piece at a time, held down on the bread and butter plate, and then put in your mouth.
But I don't have access to the butter the whole time. It's just one little butter thingy that's being passed around the table. And I have to keep saying, Robin, can you pass me the butter? Hey, Robin, can you pass me? And Robin is going, what's up with the dude with the butter problem?
Well, that is intentional. You see, Rick, we need to all slow down in our eating. So it should take some time to eat that dinner roll. And also you should be eating other food while you eat that dinner roll. So the dinner roll doesn't get consumed by itself before you move on to your
other
food.
They bring the bread to keep me entertained for the 20 minutes before I get my food.
Yes, yes. I know. It is an issue. If you have to eat it beforehand, it's okay if you have to. But then maybe get another one that you would eat slowly throughout your meal. You know, you would eat a little bit of your bread and then a little bit of your main course, a little bit of your side dish. Little bit of everything, not all of one thing at one time.
So I tear my roll in half vertically.
Yes.
And little bits of butter on a little bit of bread that I tear off, not slice off.
Exactly. And you don't tear it off in front of your face. So you don't want to look like you're examining your bread. Because a lot of people do that. That's not part of it.
I want to make sure I'm tearing off the best part.
Right. Yes. People give... This is another thing that tends to be dining. You know, people pay a little bit too much attention to their food. When you're in a social situation, the food is lovely and it is a part of the entertainment. But your biggest responsibility is towards your actual human companions. And oftentimes we forget that.
I don't know who you're eating with. Again, our guest today, Robin Jackson, director of the Civility School. Bread, spaghetti, soup.
Soup.
Obviously.
Spoon away from yourself.
Spoon away from yourself.
Yes, very important.
Is it? Is there a problem if whether you're at home or you're out to dinner with friends or others, you don't have a soup spoon?
What would you be using if you didn't
have... Well, I mean, by soup spoon, I mean you don't have the big wide spoon.
Oh, so when you're eating with a teaspoon.
Yeah, I just have a spoon.
You would still spoon away because you don't want to splatter yourself.
Right.
But now, if you're by yourself.
But I'm still, do you have a soup spoon? Am I supposed to announce that or ask politely?
No, you don't want to announce much of anything.
Excuse me, do I have a soup spoon?
If you're talking to a server, that's fine. I don't think I would ask the host or hostess at a dinner party.
I can't have this. There's no soup spoon.
No, remember, the more of your responsibility as a well-mannered person is to make others around you feel
because
comfortable.
Because the eye poster on the wall.
Yes. The eye poster, the civility skull eyeball is watching you. You're supposed to be making other people comfortable.
I think I heard this on NPR the other day. America is the last country whose dining citizens still cut food with their right hand, then put that knife down and pick up the fork with the right hand.
Yes. So Americans do this kind of swivel thing where we switch off our cutting hand and our eating. We don't cut off our eating hand. We change hands after we cut our food. Europeans simply cut and then eat with their left hand. And it's seen as a little bit déclassé by Europeans. I think it's okay. It is not as elegant to look at as the way Europeans eat. We do switch off. I switch off. I'm purely American in my cutting and then eating with a fork.
You don't have I'm with the American t-shirt on?
No,
while
because I do eat some other foods in the continental manner. And it is perfectly fine, by the way, to combine those methods, to combine the European with the American, North American way of eating. And the other interesting thing is really in our world, far more people eat with their hands and eat with chopsticks. And there are just as many, if not more, rituals and rules with eating with one's hands and with chopsticks.
Really?
Yeah, my family and I were in Africa, I guess, about a year ago. And so we were in Morocco, and we were eating with our hands. And there are very intricate rituals surrounding eating with one.
You share one?
When you walk into most restaurants, even some homes, there will be water coming out of maybe a spigot, but usually a pitcher. You'll go over and you are to rinse both hands thoroughly, and you do it in front of everybody. You know, it's kind of a way of saying, look, my hands are clean. We're going to share a meal together. And you dry them, and then you eat with your other. You never eat with your left hand. You eat simply with your right hand, and you keep your other hand where everybody can see it.
Again, Robin Jackson. Manners and etiquette and civility around the world. When my visions of this are teaching kids how to eat spaghetti and bread and soup, but I'm also thinking, you know, hey, if I'm getting my degree and I'm about to go into the business world, I probably want to know this, too. Do you work with any of these folks?
I do. I work with a lot of universities. I work with undergraduates. I work with graduate students who are getting their MBAs. I work with law students. We work a lot on professional etiquette, how to be around others in a professionally social environment. So how to navigate a work reception, a workplace dinner. Which side your name tag goes on, when, you know, what is proper to discuss in a work reception, how to hand somebody your business card, how to receive a business card. We also talk about business meals at restaurants, business meetings, when it's okay to start talking business, who's appropriate for initiating those conversations. There's really a lot in that realm that is fascinating, because we're asking people to be social in a professional environment. It's tough.
I'd love to hear the part about handing and receiving a business card.
Well, there are many, you know, for example, when you hand somebody your business card, you should hold it with two hands, and the font should face, the text should be so that the person receiving the business card can read the font. When you're accepting a business card from somebody, you take it with two hands. You make certain that you actually look at it. Sincerely, you look at it and try to make a comment about it. It can be anything from, oh, I didn't realize you had an office in Pittsburgh, to what lovely font you chose for your business card. But make some kind of comment, and then do not ever stick it in your back pocket. Not good etiquette. Disrespectful.
Why both hands?
Both hands show that you're actually taking the time to look at it. You're not just grabbing it and you know. So it's just a way of showing that you are accepting this from somebody else. You know, Asian people are wonderful with their business card etiquette, and they expect it from others. I think in the U.S. we've gotten a little lax about that. You also don't want to be just handing out your business card willy-nilly. You hand out a business card when it's asked of you.
Again, talking about manners and etiquette and civility with Robin Jackson here today. I took some questions from old shows, again, because previously when you visited, we had phone lines open.
Yes.
We couldn't do that today. Because we are pre-recording. Are you willing to take some of these questions again?
Love it.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to see if I have the same answers.
Well, we're going to do that. We're going to take our second break, and Great. Then we're going to come back and do this.
Good.
All right. So, again, this is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Rick Moore, Sunday morning wake-up call. Hang tight. All right, back on air with Robin Jackson. Robin, it's so nice that you joined us today.
So nice to be here.
Busy
life. I like
your
new digs. I like the big window.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Oh, by the way, you know, that was a question I meant to ask is, what is the proper way to accept a compliment?
Thank you. You never want to you know, a compliment is really like a gift. So when somebody gives you a gift, you don't want to rebuff the gift. You don't want to push it back. So a compliment is...
Because people say, oh, that's nothing.
It's
Right.
It's really not being gracious. A gracious way to accept a compliment is to say, thank you. Or to say, thank you, that makes me feel so good. Thank you, I really worked hard on that, and I'm glad you appreciate it. You never want to give back the gift of a compliment.
Yes, it is a beautiful view of the parking lot.
Good. Yes, that was perfect.
So, again, I went back and listened to the couple of the old shows that you were on before, and I don't believe that all of our current listeners might have heard these. Again, it was 2013 and 2014, so I won't assume that everyone has heard these. So I didn't write down these questions in their exact format. What do you do if you've run into someone whose name you have forgotten?
You absolutely should acknowledge the fact that you can't remember the name. There is nothing worse than getting trapped in the cycle of seeing that person time and time again, and you've realized that the first time you didn't acknowledge it, so now the second, third, fourth, fifth, maybe then it becomes even where you're seeing this person daily, it gets more uncomfortable and more uncomfortable. It's much better in the beginning to say, I'm so sorry, I don't remember your name. Much better.
This happened to me at an event. It was a family event. I think a nephew who graduated, and so there were a lot of, you know, folks from people that I hadn't seen in a long time. Not family folks, but, you know, friends of friends, et cetera. And somebody walks up to me and says, hey, I haven't seen you in 20 years. Remember when something, something? And I'm like, you know, the blank eyed.
Yeah.
Sure, of course. And then I have to leave and go ask my sister, who was that? She's like, I think it's so-and-so's brother. Didn't you graduate a year ahead of him or your mom? I don't know.
Well, you know what the great thing is, Rick, if that person is now listening to the show.
They're not.
he'll be able to tell you. And it is. It's difficult. But I think once you get used to saying, I'm so sorry, I can't remember your name, that it becomes easier. And I think it makes other people more comfortable.
Wouldn't that person feel bad that you don't remember them?
I don't think so. I think in many cases, what I've seen is that the other person may come up because they think that they know me, and they'll start talking to me, not using my name. And then I'll say, I'm so sorry, I don't remember, you know, I can't remember your name. And then they will even fess up and say, oh, I couldn't remember your name either. I just knew that we knew each other. So I think the more you can be really honest in your communications, not brutally honest, but honest, the better the communications turn out.
All right. Here's another question from a previous show. How do you tell your significant other who has decent public manners that they need to have better manners at home?
That's a tough one. And, you know, it's tough because we need to be civil and have nice manners with our family as well. And that does not mean always pointing out our spouses or, well, with children, you obviously will point it out. But with a spouse, it can be difficult because you need to be kind and gracious with your spouse as well. So pointing out manners, I think if it is something that can really cause embarrassment to the person outside of the home, that you can find a kind way to bring that up. But if it's something that this person really only does at home and does when he or she is comfortable and it's not harming anybody, I think it's better to just let it go.
All right. Again, Robin Jackson here from the Civility School. You can find Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Jackson, on LinkedIn. You can find the Civility School on Facebook. You can find thecivilityschool.com. on the website, not just for your kids, but also for adults.
Absolutely.
Let's see, another question that came up. Oh, I love this one, which was about how my boyfriend tends to guard his plate.
Yes.
When eating.
I think I remember that question. Again, I think this goes back to the last question. I think if it is something that he doesn't do in public, that perhaps it's fine. If he's doing that in public, it might be a nice thing to point it out kindly that it does look a little defensive and maybe, you know, it's not as comfortable for other people to dine with him. I would bet that that young man or man might have gone to a boarding school. Or come from a big family where he had to protect that food.
But, you know, could it also come from the fact that his significant other always wants to sample what's on his plate? Because she didn't get what she really wanted.
And
to
what
get.
A great point, Rick. You know, I teach with children and adults alike that one should never be a predator. You would never look over at somebody else's, or you should never look over at somebody else's plate and say, are you finished with that? Are you done with that?
I wanted more than my salad. How's staring, that steak?
Yeah, exactly. Staring at somebody else's plate is not really a great thing to do. It's not even that great to look over at somebody else in a dining establishment and look at your server and say, point at their food and say, that's what I'd like, but that person over there is having. It's still a little predatory.
I always had this idea for a restaurant dessert. On the dessert menu was going to be a soup spoon size dessert that was going to be a ice cream sundae so that the woman could get the ice cream sundae in the size that she really wanted, because they would always say, I only want a spoonful. I only want a taste of your dessert. And the guy going, but I wanted the whole thing of what I ordered. Get your own. And so that she could get the one size spoonful ice cream sundae. Nobody's ever taken me up on that and paid me for my idea.
I think it's been invented, right.
Well, that's because I said it on the air like 40 times. People stealing my ideas. I work with someone who barely acknowledges my good morning through mumbling their reply.
Again, I think that is, you know, not acknowledging somebody's existence is pretty much the basic form of disrespect. But I think you also really have to keep in mind that not everybody is an extrovert. Not everybody is a morning person. And be kind and be, I think, be understanding of that. That is certainly not something that you could or should correct. Now, because they're not asking you, if they ever came to you and said, you know, does it bother you that I am not as vibrant as you are in the morning, or I'm really not a morning person, you could give your honest answer. I certainly don't think that's anything that's going to bring anybody harm that you mumble good morning. It may not be as charming as you would like, but it's certainly not harmful.
What are your thoughts on electronic thank yous? You go to the party, right? You send somebody a thank you note.
I think it's great. I think the immediacy of email or texting is lovely. I think saying, I just had the most wonderful time with you. Thank you so much for inviting me. You know, doing it that evening or the next morning is a great thing to do. I do think that many occasions, however, do call for a handwritten note. I honestly think, particularly in this day and age, that is something that people really appreciate getting. And on a more self-centered kind of viewpoint, if you want to stand out in somebody's mind, sending them a handwritten thank you note that actually travels with a stamp on it through the mail system is really a nice thing to do. It makes you stand out.
What about the person who brings the bottle of wine to the party?
And you're saying, is that enough of a thank you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. I think that's a hostess or a host gift, and that's lovely. But I think there still needs to be some kind of thank you afterwards. An email or a text is certainly better than nothing at all, but I think a handwritten note really seals the deal.
Because we've gotten into this whole world of there's a, in many ways, there are gifts for many things.
Yes.
So I'll take a bottle of wine to your party. Thank you, Robin, for inviting me. And maybe that's all I do. And so I should write a thank you instead.
Well, not instead.
Or as well.
As well,
me.
As well. Definitely. Because I do believe in host gifts. Well. I think these smaller tokens, these seemingly small details of life, the slowing down, the taking time to truly acknowledge another person and their effort is, again, another important part of showing that we care about one another, that we take the time to slow down.
Do you write a thank you to me for bringing the bottle of wine?
No, you do not write a thank you for a host or hostess gift. You don't have to. You can.
You have, when you take your child to the birthday party, there's all sorts of gifts there now, right? It's not just me dropping off my child. Karen, I don't have a kid.
then you want to be careful whose child you drop off.
But you know, if I drop off some kid, if I take a kid, drop off my kid, my non-real kid, to the birthday party, oftentimes there's a gift bag there.
Yes.
For my kid to return with.
Yes.
Am I supposed to write a thank you for that? Have my kid write a thank you for that?
No, you do not need to. I have actually made my boys write thank you notes if it's been a particularly thoughtful favor bag. I think it's a nice thing to do. But if it's your perfunctory, not that any favor bag put together is, but if it's a favor bag, it's kind of part of the party. There's no need to write. I do think oftentimes, I think it's even nice to write a thank you note thanking somebody for inviting you to their party. This might sound like thank you overload, but again, I think it is a really wonderful thing to slow down and show people your appreciation. It can do a lot for our world.
Again, Robin Jackson, she is the director at the Civility School, reminding people that we can be a lot more polite and show our manners and etiquette. One of the things that has come up in conversations I've had is people walking around looking down at their phones and wearing their earbuds as they walk around, whether it's while they're at work, because many workplaces now you can do that. You don't need interaction with a coworker to do your job. on the street. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of staying plugged in all the time. I think when you're around other people, even if it's passing someone on the street, it's very nice to have that moment where you acknowledge the other person's presence. You say hello, you say good morning. If you're a man, you might even want to tip your hat. It's a nice thing to do. Acknowledgement, and as I've said earlier, lack of acknowledgement is really the basest, the most base form of disrespect.
A topic that has come up before is babysitting etiquette.
Yes.
I liked this because I had read something elsewhere about how one of the rules of babysitting etiquette is that you can eat whatever food is in the house.
No. You know, one of the things that you need to make sure of is if you are a babysitter, a teenage babysitter, or an adult babysitter, you're somebody at somebody else's house taking care of their children. That house is not your house. That house still belongs to somebody else. You do not open cabinets. You don't open medicine cabinets. You don't read things that are left out on the counter. And one of the big rules for me is that you leave the house better than you found it. So you're there, you know, even if it's washing a couple dishes that are in the sink, helping the child you're babysitting to clean up his or her room, that you leave it better than before, but that you honor their privacy.
And you can't eat whatever's in the house?
You can ask beforehand, are there any foods, you know, I didn't eat dinner. Is there anything that you would prefer for me to eat? I think, and also on the mother or father's end, it's good for them to tell the babysitter. You know, there's some etiquette on the parent's end as well to say, please feel free to eat anything that you find. Please feel free to eat, you know, anything except that chocolate cake that we're saving for somebody's birthday tomorrow. So I do think it has to be communicated. If it isn't, I think it's fine for the babysitter to say, is there anything you'd prefer that we not eat, the child not eat, that I not eat?
Again, Robin Jackson here. Just a few minutes left, finishing up the hour. Show pre-recorded. It will end up on SeavillePodcast.com. Robin, as we finish up in the last few minutes, modern day phone etiquette.
Yes. You know, it's changed a whole lot. When I first started this and I would meet with companies and organizations, they still had elaborate landline, you know, phone systems. Homes still had landlines. And now as we evolve, even many companies are still working, you know, with individual cell phones. Most homes don't have landlines anymore. It is a completely different situation. So things have changed. A lot of things, however, have not changed. If you are going to be on the phone with somebody, you need to give your full attention to that person. There should not be any chomping on chewing gum. There should not be any eating. There should not be any drinking. You also don't want to invade anybody else's space with your telephone conversations. So if you're in the middle of the grocery store having a very in-depth phone conversation with somebody, it's nice to use a low voice. It's nice to kind of not be in the midst of a lot of people. And you know, making sure that you allow the other person to feel comfortable on the phone with you, trying to find a place that has good coverage so that you're not constantly, you know, not getting on the phone if you know that you're about ready to go through a spot that is always a problem spot for you. All of those things. If you are using kind of a landline system with a business, you need to ask your customer if they mind being put on hold. You never just summarily put somebody on hold. Just being kind and, again, thoughtful of the other person.
All right. About 30 seconds left. Current politics, and I left this for the very end, is it's not been the most civil. But we had one of the candidates come out recently and give an apology.
Yes. Yes. And just, you know, as a note, really, politics really very rarely are civil. You can look back many, many years and see different campaigns and really civility seems to go out the window. This one was has been maybe a little bit more so that way. But and the candidate came forth with an apology just recently. I think it's great to apologize. I think it's nice to know, however, how to apologize. So with children, even in my youngest classes, we go through rules about apologizing. Even what look one should have on your face while you're apologizing. It should be an apologetic face, you know, a neutral face, not a pouty face, not a angry face. You need to make sure your facial expression is good. I think the biggest thing about an apology is to never use the word if I have offended you. I'm sorry if I have offended you, if I have done something that you have construed as. But using the word if really takes an apology and makes it a non-apology. And I think that's an important thing. And I think it's something that we hear, if we don't hear the actual word if, we hear the we hear it in the tone of voice or in the excuses that come afterwards. Learning to make a good, thoughtful apology would be a lovely thing to see in any political candidate's repertoire.
Robin Jackson, director of the Civility School here in Charlottesville. Robin, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Rick, and thank you, Dan.
You can go to thecivilityschool.com, check out what classes are upcoming, both for your children or yourself. Or your business. Thank you.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.